Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Woolworths Pre-Close Briefing. All attendees will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when prompted. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this event is being recorded. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Roy Bagattini. Please go ahead, sir.
Morning, everyone. Janine Womersley here. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm sure you would have all seen the trading update and statement that we released on SENS about 2 hours ago in respect of this 20 weeks of our FY22 financial year. This is the second time we're hosting a pre-close call. So our first was in June, which we did via a webcast. I'm thinking now was to try a chorus call, really just to enable a bit more sort of two-way interaction and hopefully provide a more engaging session. So, but really welcome your feedback. So do let us know your thoughts afterwards if this works for you. So I'm joined today by Roy Bagattini, our Group CEO, and Reeza Isaacs, our Group FD. And maybe Roy, just hand over straight to you
for some opening remarks. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Janine. And yes, good morning to everyone. And let me add my warm welcome to all of you. And thank you for joining us this morning. I'll kick off with a couple of, general remarks. And then we'll sort of throw it open to a bit of a Q&A sort of session for the balance of the time. I think from the trading statement that we sort of released a couple of hours ago, you would have seen that we've had a particularly tough start to our 2022 financial year, largely due to Australia, where we've lost 16 weeks of trade for over 70% of our business, given the lockdowns in New South Wales and Victoria. However, during that period, we have seen a really strong online growth with CRG, now our Country Road Group, having more than 50% of their sales come through the online channel. We've also augmented our online business there with the partnership with Iconic, and sales there are tracking really significantly ahead of our expectations. David Jones, on the other hand, we have now just over a third of our sales through this period being through the online channel. So very high online penetration rates for both those businesses, but clearly insufficient to offset the impact of the store closures. And as a result, total sales have declined over the period. We're very pleased, though, with the way our teams have responded to these challenging conditions. And as you'd expect us to, we've really intensified our focus on preserving cash, pretty much what we did same time last year, more or less, as we were going in and out of different lockdowns there too. But we've really put a big focus on the way we manage working capital. We've reprioritized capital expenditure. We've reduced all discretionary costs. And unfortunately, we've also had to stand down a number of our staff, given that we did not have the benefit of the government's JobKeeper program, which you'd recall provided significant support to us and to our people last year this time. Notwithstanding those initiatives, the impact of lost sales, coupled with the absence of the one-off support measures, negatively impacted the profitability of both David Jones and the Country Road Group businesses, and that will consequently impact the group as a whole for the first half. What is encouraging, though, to note is that we've seen quite a strong bounce back, a strong recovery since both those states have begun reopening and we've begun trading again. And certainly, across both those businesses, sales are tracking significantly ahead of our expectations for the moment. And the teams are very focused on maximizing the critical festive period selling moment to try and claw back as much as they can there from a revenue point of view. At the same time, we also have not been immune to the disruption we're seeing globally in shipping delays. This is something our teams are managing very closely. We've been able to pull forward orders where we can to ensure that we have the right sort of inventory going into our stores in terms of newness, but at the same time having to manage the inventory positions that we have coming out of lockdown. So importantly to note, though, is that we're not veering off course. We continue to execute against our strategies and the commitments we've made to you in this in regards to these two businesses, and you should expect to see signs of that delivery coming through as we regain momentum in the second half of our financial year. Turning to South Africa, I guess like much of the industry, the broader trading environment has remained impacted by the factors that we're now all too familiar with. COVID-19 impacts. We've seen the pickup in load shedding. And of course, we've all sort of experienced the devastating impact of civil unrest in KwaZulu-Natal and parts of Gauteng. I think it's fair to say that as a business, we probably came off less scathed than some of our peers. But the unrest did knock consumer confidence and has certainly also disrupted a number of supply opportunities around certain product lines. From a divisional perspective, we saw our foods business grow sales by just over 3%, which is a respectable performance in the context in particular of the period that we were comping. Last year at this time, we were delivering double-digit sales growth and sort of 5 to 6% ahead of market growth. So that was obviously supported by some of the tailwinds that we got through COVID in terms of in-home consumption. And that was probably something that was always going to normalize as lockdown restrictions eased. And certainly if you look at our performance over a two-year period, we've grown sales by just under 15%, with the majority of that being organic, because as you know, we've been very modest in terms of adding new space to our fleet over the last year. And as we said to you, I mean, this current period would be one of consolidation as we comp our COVID numbers. But from here, we expect to look to build off the space. And the team are working on a series of growth initiatives, and we look forward to sharing those with you in due course. In fashion, beauty, and home, our business there, we've begun to see some encouraging recovery in those businesses, particularly the fashion business. We're still a few percentage points shy of our pre-COVID base, but more importantly, the financial health, the underlying financial health, the profitability of the sales we're now achieving is much more in line with where we'd want it to go. We're seeing a much stronger trend in full price sales, and you'll recall from previous meetings with you, it is one of the key focus areas that we've called out. This was in part underpinned by the launch of a refreshed spring summer ranges, which we brought into market a little earlier, but also some of the deliberate shifts we're making in terms of our promotional strategies. In fact, our recent winter clearance sale was the most profitable sale that this business has had in several years, and we'll have to talk a little bit more about that at some point. So we've got a lot of questions that we are coming in on the recovery, the timing of the recovery of FBH, and whilst we are certainly encouraging signs, it's still too early for us to explicitly call that we've fundamentally turned the corner and we're on the way up, but I think we have put in place a number of the right sort of building blocks, and I'm really encouraged by what we're seeing, especially in our fashion categories, including women's wear and kids wear, but also in terms of our beauty business. Across the South African operations, you will have seen we're still delivering a strong online growth. We have pretty ambitious online growth plans, and we've targeted the foods business to be in the high single digits, FBH to be in the double digits, and we continue to go after that, but not at all costs, to be quite frank. Online is a margin dilutive channel, and we're very mindful though that we need to get the balance right between being where the customer is at, meeting customer expectations, which we will do, but also mitigating the impact of online on the overall levels of profitability. So I guess just to recap, a challenging start to the first 20 weeks. We've been able to trade most of our stores in Australia, and we haven't had the support of JobKeeper and rent relief, which we did in last year's numbers. And that's obviously negatively impacted the first half performance. But these are sort of unforeseen and somewhat out of our control factors, and we have to find a way of dealing with that. And as I say, very pleased that we're taking the right actions in that regard. Also to note, our balance sheet remains really strong, and Australia remains in a very healthy cash position, so we're very comfortable with that. And overall, I think we're well positioned to capitalize on the sort of the normalcy or the normalizing of trading activity that we see now emerging. I think this year is going to be one of a bit of a tale of two halves, where we still see a little bit of the impact of COVID in this first half, whether it be as a result of the lockdowns or by virtue of the base effect that I've been talking about. But certainly as we move into the second half and trading conditions recover, you should expect to see improved momentum as a result of the various initiatives we've very much still got underway. So I'll stop there and you know, just let's throw it open to questions from the group. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone or the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw your question, you're welcome to press star then two to exit the question queue. Mm-hmm. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The first question comes from Paul Stugers of Bank of America.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you, Paul.
Hi, Roy. Hi, Ariza. Hi, Janine.
Hi.
Thanks for the opportunity. You've obviously given guidance already on the first half earnings per share guidance, which you expect to be 20% lower. So I was hoping you could maybe unpack the drivers of that. Clearly, Australia is the big drag. I'm interested in SA Food. Maybe a little bit more color on gross margin momentum and costs, you know, and what you're seeing in terms of investment in price in SA Food. And then also in David Jones, I see the sales momentum, obviously the lockdown, but there was quite a lot of momentum on cost savings there as well. So I'm just wondering any more color on David Jones in terms of, you know, profitability for the first half. Thank you.
Yeah, so Paul, it's Ariza, yeah. I'll maybe jump in.
Sure.
You know, Roy and Janine can add, but you know, the profit guidance that we are giving is obviously very broad. You know, we are saying that you know, based on our estimates, you know, profits will be down, you know, by more than 20%. We'll give you you know, clearer guidance, I guess, you know, closer to you know, when we finalize sort of I guess half year results. We do enter our biggest trading period of the year, November and December, obviously leading up to the festive season. But there's a couple of reasons why we are calling out that our profits will be down on last year. The first obviously is the impact of the first quarter, the trade impact, but also the impact of JobKeeper and rainfall relief that we had in the first quarter and the support that we had last year, you know, from government and landlords. The second is the sale of Bourke Street, and obviously that Bourke Street Men's, and that profit came through was recognized in the first half of last year. And then of course we've got things like profit on the recognition of derecognition of some of the lease exits and cancellation gains. So there's a few sort of numbers in there which is non comparable, which makes the numbers actually non comparable to last year. So Paul, and then just with regard to, I guess, the rest of the income statement, we're not giving guidance, you know, on margin, you know, and of course expenses. We'll talk to that in detail at the half year. But obviously from a Australia perspective, there has been a build up of stock, you know, because of the lockdown, and we will be needing to clear that stock in the first half as we get, you know, into spring summer. But yeah, and then from a South Africa perspective, no major changes. Obviously last year benefited from the higher volumes and the, you know, the sort of flywheel effect that had on things like waste and rebates, you know, on the foods business. But we'll give more color, you know, with regard to that at the half year.
And Reza, just to confirm though, the Bourke Street Men's profit from last year, that wasn't in the adjusted HEPS, was it? Or
No. Adjusted HEPS takes out all those funny and
right.
Normal. Yeah. But we obviously comment, I mean, we're making the statement of greater than 20% in respect of EPS, HEPS, and adjustment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vanika Maseko of JP Morgan.
Morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you, Vanika.
Thanks for the time and thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted to get a little bit more color on the supply disruptions impact. It doesn't sound like it was as bad, but maybe you can kind of give a little bit more color in terms of the reliance on China and the Far East of the South African businesses versus Australia, and maybe on a go-forward basis, what the impact of the rising freight rates and shipment costs might have on your inflation, product inflation going forward.
Yes, no, great question. Thank you, Frank. I mean, I think if we look at the different component parts of the group, certainly from a foods perspective, SA, there's very little impact from a supply chain disruption perspective. We have over 90% of our product, sourced locally, so that's pretty much nothing there material. Even in terms of our fashion, beauty, and home business, there are some impacts from an inflation perspective, cost inflation perspective, that we're dealing with around 1 to 2%, which we'll basically manage through our margins and ultimately, if necessary, pass on to customers. But nothing material, or significant that would concern us, for this financial year. Australia a little bit different in that context. Yes, they do get a lot of their sourcing from the China base, and we are experiencing on average between 2 to 4 weeks delay in bringing new product in, and that's important obviously from a newness perspective and a refresh perspective as we go into these different selling moments for us. Availability overall not being materially affected, something that the teams are managing well. Obviously the bringing of new stock needs to be sort of managed and juggled with the context of coming out of lockdown and the carryover of the stock that we've had from that lockdown and the way we're going to manage that going forward. But again, in terms of fundamental availability, nothing that is overly concerning for our two businesses. Reza, do you want to comment a little bit on inflation?
Thanks, Roy. With regard to inflation, I think within the foods business, inflation, we have been sort of a bit lower than I guess what maybe you guys would expect. But the bulk of our product is obviously locally sourced. We've actually seen good harvest. The bulk of our product is fresh. And of course we are continuing to invest in price. So we're seeing underlying inflation around 4%, but price movement at about 2.6, which obviously demonstrates the continued price investment within the business. In FBH, we've seen sort of 4 to 5% inflation within FBH.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Susan.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The next question comes from Shamil Ishmael of Primary Research.
Hi there. Hi, Roy, Janine, and Lisa. Can you perhaps shed some light on the difference between David Jones and Country Road growth rates? They're both impacted by the same lockdown conditions. The prior year, they both declined by about 11%. And the space growth also very similar. So what would explain the difference in total growth? Thanks.
There are a couple of things in there, Shamil. I think for a start, I mean, the sort of concentration of David Jones' business through the New South Wales and Victoria state and the location of stores is the factor. Also, the CBD locations within those states where David Jones business is disproportionately exposed to CBD locations, a second factor. And then thirdly, the online businesses, the Country Road Group business is significantly further along and developed as an omni play. omnichannel play, and you know, they've been able to sort of, to some extent, offset you know, the loss of brick and mortar sales through their online platform. And they have also, within the last 6 months, launched an initiative with a significant, you know, a big marketplace player called the Iconic in Australia, and that's also been incremental to their business. So those would be some of the key factors that would differentiate why you're seeing the difference in decline between the two businesses.
Shamil?
Yes, that's fine, thanks.
Does that conclude your questions?
Yes, thanks.
Thank you very much. The next question comes from Nomte Ngumbela of Utombo Wells.
Thanks. Morning, everyone. Just one question from my side. The last results you indicated sort of 10 consecutive periods of market growth, and you felt quite comfortable about your ability to sustain your competitive advantage. It does seem like competition, especially in the food division, is starting to intensify. Are you able to sort of provide some color on the stability of your market share, and any plans to just counter the growth of your competitors, especially in the online space? Thank you.
Yes, yeah, thank you for the question, Anta. No, I mean, I think, you know, we sort of, you know, sort of stay with what we've said with regards to our market and our relative market performance. You know, we manage our business over a longer period, you know, not necessarily over a 20-week period, but or for a six-monthly sort of process. But we do expect to, you know, sustain our levels of growth in the food business, you know, ahead of the market, going, you know, on a go-forward basis. So, you know, one would expect that on a full-year basis, we deliver against, that expectation for sure. Yeah, there's no doubt that, some of our competitors have made a bigger play into the online space relative to us. So I think we were, and we acknowledge that, I think we were a little late to the game, particularly with regards to the on-demand component of our online sort of offering, you know, with Woolies Dash. We now do have Woolies Dash up and running across just under 20-odd stores across the fleet, and that will double within the next, in fact, over the next few months. And, you know, we are, you know, sort of looking at ensuring that what we do in that space, in fact, you know, does well, you know, in the sense of meeting the consumer need here. So we've been working, you know, at developing the proposition to the point where it does deliver against customer expectations. We now have, you know, we've got to the place where we more than 95% of our orders now are delivered either early or on time in that on-demand space, and we're perfecting the underlying capabilities, ways of working, and processes to ensure that as we scale that up, we scale it up in a way that is ultimately successful. But we're also mindful of accelerating our growth in this space, and we measured in our approach because we are looking at trying to strike the right balance between where our customers are at and what they're looking for, and frankly the profit decretive nature of this business. It is something that we remain very focused on. Just in terms of the online as well, I mean, we are really the only retailer in the market that, in fact, has three different online formats or propositions. We have the conventional sort of online proposition where you can do your full grocery shop across the entire catalog and get that delivered in a couple of days. You have the on-demand that I've just been speaking about, Woolies Dash, which is the, certainly within the hour or within the same morning, certainly within the same day sort of proposition. And have a click and collect sort of component to that. So we have three different formats, and they all have different sort of economics that go with it, and they meet different customer needs. But we're also in the process of integrating all three of those propositions into one single app that makes it super convenient for the customer, to basically browse, shop, and pay, in a seamless way. So the teams are working on that, and that should be up and running in an integrated format by the end of our financial year.
All right. Thanks, Roy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a further reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The next question comes from Brian Thomas of Laurium Capital.
Good morning, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Brian.
Thanks very much for doing this call, and good luck for the AGM later today. Just maybe you can help us with understanding in the base year. So if we go back to last year, what the impact of JobKeeper and I guess the forbearance that you received in rentals in Australia was at a cents per share level. So I think you did kind of 1.93 last year. Of that 1.93, how much was JobKeeper and the forbearance? It just help us kind of contextualize the extent to which that is coming into the next year's numbers.
Yeah, Brian, I think we shared with you what the impact of JobKeeper and rent relief was.
I'm sure you did. I just can't remember it, Risa. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. I was gonna give it to you. Don't worry. So for David Jones, I think it was we were about $39 million, and Country Road about $35 million. You know, for those two businesses. You know, obviously that is the number, sort of a pre-tax number. And then also what it doesn't take into account is the impact of the lost sales. You know, in that particular period. So I think we sort of gave you a broad estimate of what that impact sort of was last year. I think it should be fairly simple to calculate on an EPS level. But just a reminder that you can't look at it in isolation, Brian. You need to take the lost sales and margin obviously into account when trying to sort of normalize the number. But look, I mean, both what makes it difficult is that both bases are disrupted. So it's a bit more of a difficult sort of estimate to make. So you're comparing a disrupted base to a disrupted base.
Yeah, it's not easy. Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from David Smith of Investec.
Morning, team.
Morning, Dave.
Hi, David.
So I've got two sort of linked questions. One, you've spoken about your expectation that earnings are going to be down more than 20%. Is it the expectation that your cash generation is going to follow suit? Just how, like, sort of underlying versus accounting. And then the second question would be around the Australian business. So obviously there's been a big pickup at online during this period of lockdowns. How sticky are you expecting consumer patterns to change in terms of shopping online? And does it mean anything for your negotiation with landlords? Please give us some sort of update on how space reduction and rental reductions are going in Australia and what that means for your second half.
So David, I'll take the first part of the question. So just with regard to cash, the EBITDA obviously in Australia will be impacted in the first half because of the first quarter. It is significant. But we obviously have implemented, as Roy said, cash preservation measures in terms of working capital and a reduction of, or at least managing of CapEx sort of more tightly. But you know, the cash generation in Australia in the first half will be negatively affected. But in South Africa, you know, we've got the dividend obviously that we paid in the first in the month of September in respect of the previous financial year. But again, in ESA also we looked at CapEx quite closely, and we managed intake as well. So definitely in Australia, but to a lesser degree South Africa.
And just your question around online, I think there has been obviously an exponential jump in the online growth here for both those businesses, as you would expect when access to brick and mortar isn't available. We've seen from previous sort of cycles of lockdown and then re-emergence to normal and then back into lockdown and coming out again, David, there is a level of stickiness, but not to any significant extent. It's just a natural underlying growth in online shopping, which is sort of supporting the proportion of online sales relative to brick and mortar growing over time. And, on a normalized basis, or certainly pre these lockdowns, the Country Road business was tracking at just over 30% of its total revenues through its online channel. During this period, it was over 50%. And we expect that to sort of come back down to, the above 30%, a third or so of the business, but then continue to grow from there, but probably plateauing out at a point. David Jones, similarly, they were just under 20-odd%, 17-18% of their business through the online channel, and this obviously accelerated to way past 20%, but we'll come back down to around that 20% level. What has been interesting in the last sort of 3 to 4 weeks as trade has opened up, online sales have declined quite a bit as people have just got out and gone into malls and stores, and we're seeing brick and mortar sales really, as I say, with a bit of a strong rebound there, anticipating some of that momentum to play through at least to the back end of this year. So that's something that we're obviously managing. We're also increasingly managing the business in more of an integrated channel way, an omni-channel sort of way, where online and stores are now sort of crossing over increasingly in terms of the customer journey, and appreciating what that means and how to best sort of intersect with that customer journey, whether it's through a brick and mortar or an online sort of opportunity, both from a brand building as well as from a commercialization transactional perspective. We're sort of managing the business and the customer experience on that basis. In terms of the question around space, and landlords, we have put out a commitment around space reduction, which we're still confident in delivering against. We accelerated that, and in fact, towards the end of our last financial year, we did actually make an announcement around, a further sort of arrangement or deal that we've been able to strike with one of our major landlords there, taking a further 50,000 square meters out of that fleet, which in and of itself accounts for around 9% of current space. So some significant, relatively speaking to where we were, I think some good progress being made in overall space reduction, plans and strategies there. These moments of lockdown certainly provide an opportunity to engage landlords in a different way, but the latitude that you have to sort of fundamentally shift longer-term lease conditions is relatively limited. Certainly through the period, we're able to negotiate different levels of abatement and different levels of support out of the landlords, but on a normalized basis, the latitude to sort of shift significantly on space is always going to be challenged. But we're making good progress with regards to the plans and the targets we've laid out around space reduction, and we should continue to see that happen.
Thank you. One cheeky follow-up.
Yes, go ahead.
Pricing being it's a knee-jerk reaction down today. At what point do you guys feel that it's attractive enough that you want to do buybacks? What will it take in balance sheet terms and share price terms for you to ramp that up?
Yeah, David, I mean, look, it's something that we do. We obviously keep an eye on, but at the end, and look, we're very aware of the, low cost of debt, at the moment, and the need to have an efficient balance sheet. But you need to be very judicious in terms of making sure that it is accretive, at the end of the day. So we're keeping a close eye on it, and we can't I would sort of comment further just in case I get myself into trouble, but we do keep a close eye on it, David.
Vague but useful, thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Zenande Mayeba of UBS South Africa.
Good morning, management. Thank you for taking my question. Just two questions. Just on, apologies if I'm repeating this, my line cut during the call. Just on the Dash app, do you have any metrics that you could disclose for us just to gauge the traction? Any numbers around monthly active users and stores that you currently service? And then suppose maybe the second question, just on the fringes, just on the insurance payments on the back of the disruptions, do you think the scope that you might have to pay slightly higher premiums on the back of that? Just a question on the fringes. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so there are a couple of, metrics that we're happy to share with you around Dash. There are a couple that we typically don't share. But, at the moment, out of the 19 stores that we have Dash linked into, we sort of drive just around 2,100, between 2,000 and 2,500 orders every day during the week, as I said, a 95% sort of on-time delivery. We have, as an idea, we've introduced a delivery fee in the last several weeks of around 35 rand, because there's a maximum basket size given the delivery capacity and capability. We've also introduced the opportunity to tip the driver, which was a request we were getting back from our customers, and we have a very specific and targeted marketing campaign to increase order volume, and we've now also sort of linked our on-demand service to our Nickel Way W seller store. So, a couple of things going into that space, but increasingly, tracking, customer feedback and using that to evolve the overall proposition. But we are at a point where collectively we feel we can now, scale that, in a measured way going forward. And hence, as I say, we'll double the number of stores by the end of the year to about 40-odd stores, and then, as I say, fairly judiciously continue to roll that out. Importantly, as I say, we're integrating the Dash format with our click and collect as well as our normal conventional online service delivery opportunity as well. In terms of your question on insurance and insurance premiums, we obviously have been through a bit of a process given what we experienced, but we're not anticipating any material movements on premiums as a result of our process there. So,
sure, thanks. Just one last question. Thanks for that. Just on the move to being less skewed to formal wear and having a mix of athleisure and casual. How should we think about the mix so far? And
yes, I mean, I think so. It's a great question because we saw through the most part of the last period. I mean, a shift out of formal wear into athleisure and casual categories. And in fact, in our stores across South Africa, we were very much over-indexed in the formal wear categories, both in terms of women's and men's wear. And we've made some deliberate calls to sort of shift that representation or that mix within our stores down to something that is more in line with where the market is, and so we've actually successfully been able to do that over the course of the last 6 to 9 months, and now we're certainly in a position that we feel more comfortable with, and that's through the introduction of athleisure and other casual wear categories growing. But what has been interesting in the last a few short months, we've seen a little bit of an uptick back into formal wear again, I guess, to some extent, as people start to return to work and have the opportunities to go out a little bit more and certainly to different types of occasions. We've seen a smart wear level of smart wear penetration growing. But, the overall mix remains pretty much 75, 25, 80, 20 in favor of casual wear to formal wear.
Zenande, what I can add to that is that over the period that Roy has alluded to, we've shifted roughly, say, 5 to 10% of the mix out of formal into casual across both men's and women's.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
The next question comes from Damon Boss of M&G Investments.
Hi, morning all. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for the time. I just want to ask around the fashion business. Can you give us some more insight into what you did differently in this winter sale to make it the most profitable one you've had in a long time, and just a little bit more insight into kind of why you brought the spring and summer ranges forward or kind of launched them a little bit earlier?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the fundamental point here for us, Damon, is I guess better understanding the customer and bringing product that has a higher probability of resonating, you know, at a moment in time. So the confidence I think that the team have in doing that, you know, allowed us to reduce the number of days on promotion and the level of the depth at which we went into promoting our product. And as a consequence, we were able to sell through more at full price. And we played around, should I say. We actually experimented with different sort of mechanics in terms of the promotional process itself and the timing of the discounts that we introduced. Typically, for example, we would go on promotion across the store, all at the same time across all product categories. We were much more targeted in the approach we took this time around, looking at specific categories that we took a little deeper, and while others we stayed in at full price, for example. And the benefit that we now have, certainly, of being able to leverage the data that we have in the group now, and the analytics that team that provides some of those perspectives and insights, allows us to make some of those particular calls. So just trialing and learning through the different processes of being much more granular and targeted in our overall approach there.
Can I maybe just add one or two comments to that? So we didn't go as broad. It was a lot more targeted. And the depth of the discount wasn't as great because it was more informed than what we've done previously. I think Roy has spoken to this point before, but we have spent historically far too much time on sale or on promotion throughout the calendar year. So in this FY22, we're going to be taking, roughly speaking, about 10 weeks out of our promotional and markdown calendar. And that obviously should have a positive impact on profitability.
Okay, thanks. That's very useful. And can I just sneak one more in? Just on the cash balances within Australia, so obviously it's been a very tough period, but at the last results, you split out the cash in Country Road and in David Jones. And can you just give us a sense in kind of where those cash balances are now sitting for those two businesses? Are they both still net cash, or has one been impacted far more than the other?
You know, Damon, we'll share those numbers with you, you know, at the half year. Obviously, you've got to take the, you know, the working capital cycle into account. And of course, I mean, we sort of hit peak working capital, utilization, or cash utilization sort of October, November. And of course, we come out of that, you know, as we trade through December. But we'll share that with you at the offer. But nevertheless, David Jones is positive, and so is Country Road. And to Roy's earlier point, we are in a strong position from a balance sheet perspective.
Okay, perfect. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Saad Chotia of Nedbank.
Okay, thank you. Hello?
Very sorry, we can't hear you.
Unfortunately, Saad seems to be having some technical issues on his side, and he's going to be rejoining the queue shortly. We have a follow-up question from Funeka Maseku of JP Morgan.
Hi guys, again, I just wanted to follow up a question on, just to belabor, I guess, the cash conversation. Just, is it fair to assume that the interim dividend or the near-term outlook for dividends will still be funded out of the South African earnings, and perhaps while I have the mic, just a brief comment maybe on WFS. I see that, you know, small book growth, but growth nonetheless. If you could give us some colors to the key drivers there. Is that increased acceptance rates? Is it increased volumes of applications? Are you increasing account sizes to existing customers? Just some comments on there would be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah. For Funeka, just on the on the dividend sort of question, we will be, I mean, all things being equal, a dividend will be, you know, we will continue with a dividend out of South Africa, and it's not that the group dividend will be paid out of South Africa. It is the South African, you know, it will be paid out of the South African earnings. That's the, you know, some of the guidance I can give you. And then, yep. Then the second part of your question was with regard to
WFS.
We are seeing sort of a rebound. But also remember last year, you know, we were also sort of coming out of a period where we actually had to make some significant adjustments, especially that macroeconomic variable adjustment of average 9 in the second half of FY sort of 2020, and of course that book was then adjusted for that, so the coverage ratio was much higher, and obviously now we're coming out of that, and we're comping effectively that sort of adjusted book. We're seeing customers coming out of forbearance and relief, and it's sort of a combination of things. I mean, but we are seeing some uptick in demand, you know, in the unsecured space.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've been rejoined by Zaid of Nedbank. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, guys. Thank you for the opportunity. So just a few questions from my side, please. So just in terms of price movement in SA FBO, so the 6.2%, can you just explain, you know, the drivers of that, especially while sort of anecdotal evidence on the ground suggests that, you know, on the basic side, you know, your pricing points have become a lot more competitive versus previous years. So I just want to understand, you know, what's driving the price movement, please. So that's the first question.
I'm very happy to take that question to Art. Hi. It's really just a function of selling increased or having a greater proportion of full price sales.
Okay, cool. That's simple. Okay, cool. And then just on the second question on FBNH, sales decline of about 7.4%, space decline of 7.4%. Obviously, that's not reflected fully in the Q and or 20-week number. Is that just a timing issue? And, you know, will we be seeing that impact coming through as the year progresses?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. So yes, there is obviously a timing impact, and you would see that fully reflected in the full year numbers. That said, we obviously do have a series of initiatives underway, which we've spoken to, strategic initiatives underway, to drive sales, you know, across the comparable store base. Plus, we are growing the online business, so we would look for that to offset the targeted space reduction strategy.
Okay, cool. Thank you. And then on food, do you guys have a number for the ex-liquor sales growth?
We don't disclose that, but I think largely because the liquor business for us is really small, so it's literally just, you know, a percentage point or two, a couple percent of our foods sales mix, and quite a nice growth opportunity for us, but given the small contribution, that's why we don't split it out.
Okay, cool. And then just one last question, sorry, on the David Jones. So Scott Fife, the new CEO, is in the role now for, I think, about a year. Can you guys maybe just talk about, you know, his achievements, the progress he's made, the initiatives that he's made in the business over the last 12 months, and then maybe talk about areas that you think there's still work to be done in David Jones over the sort of medium to longer term? It's more of a strategic question.
Yeah, I think, and good one too. I mean, I think, we've spoken at various points in time, Saad, around some of the things we're needing to sort of get right to sort of, demonstrate whether there's enough of a business case here around David Jones. But, we've focused so the work that has been done, I mean, we have reset the strategy for that business, as you would appreciate, but that we did some time ago now, just over a year or so ago, just as Scott came into the role. We've worked quite specifically on the merchandising strategy, the product strategy across that business. Again, trying to ensure that we had a compelling proposition across a range of different price points and mix of brands, and typically on an exclusive basis, which has allowed us to then also trade the business very differently to what we were doing up until that point in time. And to that end, you would have seen from our results coming into the back half of last year, we were actually growing our top-line margin, encouragingly, and that has always been an issue in that business for several years now. So, big focus on top-line margin through a better product and price promotion approach to the business, trading the business very differently. So we would want to see ourselves getting back to that as we come out of the lockdown, and certainly into our second half. We've done quite a lot of work on the cost base. We did sort of target ourselves, taking out around $20 million, on an annualized basis, pretty much on track to do that. One of the big factors that we had to deal with was a bit of an ill-informed food strategy, which was, costing the business significantly. You may recall we were talking about somewhere in the region of around $15 million or so loss making EBITDA annually, and we made a commitment to sort of resolve that, and in fact within this financial year, and we're absolutely on track to deliver against that. So some big work done on the food component of the business, and then similarly with the landlords, we've continued to chip away at this significant sort of level of leases that we have, number of stores. We are overstored. We've begun to tick down in the number of stores. About 18 months or so ago, we were up at 48, 49 stores. We're down to 43 and a bit now because some are open and haven't reopened fully, but around 43 odd stores. We have a pathway to continue to reduce space overall through store closures and making some of the bigger stores smaller, essentially, and handing back space in that process. And we've committed to a 20% space reduction there, further 20% space reduction there. So quite a lot going on. Scott has also sort of done quite a lot of work on his team. We've configured different ways of working. We've set up the structures a little bit differently. The business has got some way to go to sort of prove out some of these initiatives. But, unfortunately, the timing of these Australian lockdowns was not great. I mean, you will have seen we were picking up quite a bit of momentum coming into the back end of last year. We went into lockdown sort of in mid-June, and we've just emerged from them. And so that was a bit of a setback, to say the least. But I think we've got what we need in play to sort of get back to that level of momentum. Certainly in the second half of the year is what we're targeting.
Great, thank you very much for that detailed response, Roy. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thanks, Al.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. We have a follow-up question from Paul Stegers of Bank of America.
Yeah, hi, guys. I just wanted to follow up on the supply chain questions that Feneka asked. We've seen, obviously, the freight costs, which have, risen fourfold. But you've got lots of input cost pressures as well, cotton, polyester, viscose, every you name it, it's up 30, 50% in dollar terms. As you look forward, do you think you can manage that through, it sounds like in South Africa, lower markdowns are clearly going to be helpful for gross margins. But just qualitatively, do you think, you are going to see pressure on your gross margins, especially in Australia this year? Or do you think this is normal course of business and there's other levers you're pulling that should offset those pressures to drive better gross margins, specifically talking obviously apparel here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Paul. I mean, it definitely is price pressure. Supply chain disruptions, increased cost of freight, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We're looking probably at about sort of 100 to 200 basis sort of points increase in cost, of goods. I mean, obviously recognizing that, you know, 30 to, you know, about a third of our business is actually within the SADC region. But, but we from a margin perspective, we feel that we can manage within the current margin that we've got and actually improve margin actually through lower markdowns and promotions. I mean, you know, Roy alluded to that sort of earlier. So that's really clearly a focus of money, reducing the markdown activity that we undertake and managing that sort of more obviously closely. So we see more than enough sort of space within that to manage within that.
Paul, if I could just add to what Reza said specific to the FBH business, you know, one of our other initiatives is to edit to amplify and reduce the breadth of the offering is to go deeper in volume, and we are consolidating part of the supplier base as we do that. So just by way of example, in FY21, I think we took about 10-20% of our program through this process, and in that achieved about a 5 percentage point reduction in our input cost on that product. So that is a further opportunity for us to obviously offset some of this some of the increase in global freight rates that we're seeing. The net of it, you should expect GP margins to move up from here, not down.
Okay, and that is the same for the Australian David Jones and Country Road business?
No, and it's in Australia. I think it's fair to say that there is a bit of a headwind to GP margin. It's not just the freight costs. It's also obviously the fact that we've been in lockdown for a significant component of the period, and do have some inventory that you would understandably need to clear.
Mm. Okay, now, that's very useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there are no further questions on the lines. I will now hand over to Mr. Roy Bagattini for closing comments.
Yeah, well, thank you. And once again, thank you to all of you for dialing in and giving us an opportunity to provide you with a bit more perspective on what clearly, at a level is a disappointing sort of start to the year for us. I think the underlying sort of initiatives and sort of processes we've got underway. I mean, we're confident, Dan, and certainly I am, that we're going to sort of restore some of the momentum that we've lost, and very little that unfortunately we could have done about these government imposed lockdowns. But very 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 confident the team have what it takes to sort of claw back as much as we can, and then sort of go into the second half with a little bit more momentum. Still a lot of self-help opportunities across the business, and the teams are sort of obviously busily focusing on that. But we look forward to, re-engaging with you, some of you over the next couple of days, but certainly when we sort of get together around our half one results in February. But if there are any more questions, or if you have any more, please shoot them over to myself, Reza, or Janine, and we'll get back to you on those as soon as we can. Really appreciate your time. Thank you very much for dialing to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's event. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.